Your On the Mark podcast is loading now. The On the Mark podcast is sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company, family-owned dealership since 1915, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Now, here are your hosts for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence and Ben Reichley.
Greetings. Ben's got the day off. We're glad to say he's probably sunning himself in southern Louisiana or something along that line. Do we know where he is? We don't want to disclose.
I'm not at liberty to mention.
He's on a staycation. We'll leave it at that.
I know he'll be at the sandwich stroll tomorrow. So,
okay.
If you need to see him, come to Sunbury tomorrow.
Okay, yeah, if you absolutely positively have to get Ben overnight, that's where he'll be. On the Mark, sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company. Check them out at sunburymotors.com. Our phone number, which you will need later, is 570-743-9565. That's 570-743-WKOK. In the meantime, you can email us now at onthemark@wkok.com and text us at 70236. It is Financial Friday, so the first 30 minutes of the show, we're going to dedicate ourselves to the important work and endeavors and the news as it relates to finances with the Greater Susquehanna Valley Chamber of Commerce. Bob Garrett in studio, President and CEO of the Greater Susquehanna Valley Chamber of Commerce. So, good morning, sir.
Great to be here, Mark, and good to see you, John.
Thank you for being here. And he makes reference to... Hello, John. Welcome aboard.
Good morning, Mark.
John Shipman, good Sunbury-based business person, but it's got offices around the valley and just a real active investment counselor is the right way to put it?
Right.
Okay. So, yeah, and he sees the dashboard and sees everything on it and will tell you what to avoid and what to drive right into and enjoy in terms of your portfolio. And Amy Buhner is here, Bowen Agency Realtor and chair of the Greater Susquehanna Valley Chamber of Commerce and just a real active doer in our community. And we're glad to say that she's paying more and more attention to the global economy these days since she's been on our Financial Friday discussion. So, Amy, thanks for calling in.
Thank you for having me. Learning more every day.
Yeah, I'll bet you are. Yeah, this is a steep learning curve, so we appreciate that. Well, let's start out with Bob. 339,000 jobs, maybe slightly more than your white paper overnight predicted, and joblessness up to 3.7%.
Oh, you're so kind, Mark. I blew it on this one, and unfortunately, this is the month I get my annual review from my chairperson, Amy Buhner. And Amy's probably shaking her head. Bob, that wasn't a slight. That was a times three. Actually, I just report what the economists tell me. Okay, so none of this. I have my fingerprints on it, but I don't take any sense of authorship. Yeah, there was a prediction that we were going to see the economy really starting to slow. Keep in mind, we're under 10 straight months of interest rate increases. We're under probably the second year in a row of a chronic and seems to be getting worse, widening, if you will, labor shortage. And we 339,000 jobs. That's the economy's still sizzling right along. Now, you heard that most of these are in the hospitality and leisure industry. And frankly, John, 3 years ago, I would have said, those are not good-paying, family-sustaining, whatever jobs you want to call them. But, life has changed. The hospitality industry, and thanks to, in some parts, to automation, they understand now if you want to keep somebody, you want to keep that front of the house at your restaurant, you've got to pay them well. You want to give good service, because that's what people count on. You want to give good service, that you have to pay them well. And so that's good. That is the sector that took the biggest hit in the beginning of the pandemic. It's the sector that's leading our growth. I am a little bit concerned about the analysis that they gave about the retail sector and hourly workers, because that's sort of foundational to our economy, and we'll get into that as the show unfolds.
All right, John, your analysis.
I think that what we're seeing here is when both go up. what you're seeing, I think, is a lot of people starting to take second jobs. We know that 60% of the people, or a little better than that now, live paycheck to paycheck, have no reserve. And so when you can't pay your bills, you either default or you get a part-time job to help along. So I think that although the numbers don't fully show that, at this point, I think we're seeing a lot of people saying, you know, if I'm going to keep paying my mortgage and all this other stuff, I need a part-time job. So I think that those numbers reflect that.
And Amy, we're getting our initial reaction to what was predicted overnight and what happened, that 339,000 new jobs and joblessness ticks up to a relatively immaterial 3.7%, but it's up. So, of course, if you work for Fox News, you could say, hey, joblessness is skyrocketing. You know, it's up a fraction of a point. Your reaction?
Oh, I would just say this, as Mr. Garrett pointed out, sometimes you see things that you don't predict. You listen to the economists. When you listen to the experts and you think you know what you might be saying next, we'll go back to that steep learning curve that I'm on. So I'm watching and listening. I'm trying to relate it to the facts that I know and look at the real world every day. But recently in some real estate seminars, as we compare economy to real estate, things will continue in this direction, maybe slightly, until there's improvement. I mean, we all know that. That's kind of just the way it goes. But I would say maybe it's not so alarming as it is slightly surprising, and we just have to keep on. Now, the market in real estate is still what it's been, very competitive, low inventory, just a high number of buyers. So we're still seeing some things there. So in relation to what Mr. Shipman's mentioning, it's tough because we see both sides of that, but on the upside of that, we're on the uptick. So it's trying to balance all of that in mind and body and then reality.
All right, we're going to try to dig into that a little bit more, some of the real estate trends. You know, what are the sale levels? What's still out there? We're going to get a call from an additional guest checking in this shortly this morning, so we'll have an opportunity to find out more about what's happening for college graduates. Any additional reaction to the jobless numbers?
As we prepare for Dr. Josh
Kahn,
thank you. Thank you, John. As we prepare for Dr. Kahn to call in, I just want people to remember that now these are May's numbers. So the numbers that are reported were always a month behind. So these numbers probably will not reflect most college graduates, most high school graduates, because they are taken in the second full week of the month of May. Now, there will be some graduates coming out of school, but what's happening in the economy right now is probably, as you say, John, this is really people taking on second jobs. These are folks creating, you know, they're looking down the road and they're saying, okay, something good is coming. I've got to get my employees on staff now. But when Dr. Kahn calls in, we'll hear a whole lot more about the data about the graduating class of 2023. So you'll want to stay tuned and listen into that.
All right, we're going to put Amy on hold. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, hopefully we'll have a good guest on the line. We'll continue our discussion. I got real estate questions coming up, and we're going to talk about chamber activities and events and things occurring. And John Shipman's here, so we'll get more of this local pulse of what's happening around here and what folks are saying. We'll be right back on WDKOK's On the Mark.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Welcome back to WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show. On the Mark, I'm Mark Lawrence. Sunbury Motor Company, our sponsors, Financial Friday, our endeavor right now. And we have Bob Garrett in studio, Amy Buhner's on the line, chair of the chamber, and Dr. Josh Kahn is on the line, associate director of research and public policy at the National Association of Colleges and Employers. So, Dr. Kahn, thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks for having me.
I really do appreciate it. Explain the mission and work of the National Association of Colleges and Employers. I think this is just deep research that's, I think I know what's going on in the world, but you're finding out what's really going on in the world.
Yes, NACE has been around, the National Association of Colleges and Employers, we call it NACE. It's been around since the 1950s, 1956, I believe. Our mission is to serve the transition space between college and career. So we have members that are colleges and employers, hence the name, and we bring them together for convenings, our conferences next week in Florida, for example, and we provide research, do advocacy on their behalf, and help serve the college graduates entering the job market and those who serve and recruit them.
All right. Well, as Rush Limbaugh used to say, now tens of thousands of students with minds of mush are graduating. So what is happening for the 2023 graduates?
Well, they are entering a very strong job market. We survey our members, and our employer members are expecting to hire 4% more college graduates than they did last year. And last year was a huge hiring year. So it looks like we are set for two back-to-back very strong years.
The Josh, this is Bob Garrett. It's good to talk to you again. 2 days in a row. This is maybe I ought to make a trip to Florida so we can make it a whole week next week. But seriously, the you're starting to give us some data that sort of is it runs. Let's just say it's counterintuitive to the common narrative that the college graduate of today is not interested in employment. They just want to spend time in their jammies and not go to work. But you're telling us that there's actually an increase of hiring. I wonder if you could sort of, can you give us sort of a comparison? You said the organization goes back to 1956. I don't know that we have to go the whole way that far back. But how does this year compare to last year? How does it compare to pre-pandemic, for example?
Well, among the various data we collect, we conduct what we call a first destination survey. Colleges survey their students on what they're doing 6 months out of college. Do they have a job? Are they in the military, graduate school, et cetera, et cetera? And we also they also ask students if they're looking for work or if they're not looking for work. And so we can track this going back several years. I looked about the last 5 years back, and in 2018, only 1.5% of students were not seeking a job or graduate school. So they were just like, I graduate and I'm good. I don't need work. I don't need to do anything. That was only 1.5% of students. Over the last several years, that has just slowly ticked down, and now we're at 1.1%. So that number of students who don't want to work is actually decreasing. There are more students who want to work now, coming right out of school. Furthermore, in our student survey, which we get directly to students, we ask them what kind of attributes they are looking for in their first job out of college. And we give them a long list, high starting salary, vacation, casual atmosphere at their work. And the top three are job security. Students want job security. Given the chaos of today's world, that's entirely understandable. But the next two are that they want to improve their skills. They want to improve their job-specific skills, and they want to improve their applied skills that can be transferred across different jobs. The high starting salary comes in ninth on the list. So these students are willing to, I see it as investing in their skills. They want a job where they can improve their skills, which makes sense early on in their career, and they're willing to forego a high starting salary to do that. So that, to me, doesn't sound like a group of kids who don't want to work. That sounds like a very sensible group of kids who want to invest in their skills, their competencies early in their career, which is exactly the time to do it.
And Josh, if I could just restate that, because I want to make sure that everybody got that the way I think I heard what you just said. What you said was that 5 years ago, so let's say pre-pandemic, 98.5% of graduating seniors were looking for work. That number has actually dropped now for this year, which we'll call post-pandemic. Now, I know I'm getting a little bit of fuzzy, quantitative expressions there, but now that number has actually gone up, and now it's 98.9% of graduating students are looking for work, and the things that they're looking for are job security. We can all understand that. And then it sounds like what you said was that they're also committing themselves to lifelong learning. They want to they understand they're coming in with entry level or a little bit more than entry level, and they want to commit themselves to becoming masters in whatever their trade happens to be. Did I hear that correctly?
Absolutely.
And we're going to go to John for the next question.
Dr. Khan, just a question. How has the employment landscape changed over the last 5 years as far as what kind of jobs are available compared to the kind of jobs that graduates are prepared for? Are you seeing a lot major swings in that, or has that been pretty consistent? And what industries seem to be leading right now?
Well, I think over the last 5-10 years, we've seen a huge expansion of tech jobs, of course. You know, and tech jobs are not just in the technology sector of, you know, where we think about internet and app development and stuff. Tech jobs are everywhere now. They are across industries. Every business, every industry is using technology, computer technology to some degree. So I think that has been probably the largest expansion of jobs outside of healthcare. This year, we are seeing an increase compared to last year in transportation, right, as transportation recovers from the pandemic shutdowns of early 2020. So we're seeing an increase in transportation. We're also seeing an increase in chemical and pharmaceutical manufacturing, engineering services, computer and electronic manufacturing, and finance. So some fairly common industries that we've seen towards the top of the list for the last several years, especially now with money from the Inflation Reduction Act, we fully expect engineering, construction, and those related industries to be quite strong for the next 5 to 10 years.
Dr. Khan, you must go around calling yourself a myth buster, because I just assumed that all teenagers were lazy and were just interested in, what did you call it, overnight funployment? Did you call that?
I used a headline out of the week, and it says, new grads looking for work or just fund employment?
Fund employment, yeah. Okay. So they want fun and they want funds. So, but some other myths. Go ahead and bust the myths. What these young people are really doing in the workplace, what they really really want?
They really want to improve their skills. They want to improve their standing. Students want internships to get into their preferred fields, or at least to try them out while they're still students and very recent graduates. So these students are looking to invest in themselves. They are looking to expand their professional networks and enter the workforce. Probably the biggest and newest shift is the emergence of a hybrid workplace. Let me pull up the stat right here. We have about, in our student survey, 46% of students said they want to work in a hybrid work setting. So that's partly going into the office in person and partly being able to work remotely. This is brand new, of course, since the pandemic, and this is sort of a new landscape that both college grads and employers are going to have to learn how to navigate. This is not to say that hybrid or remote work is absolutely brand new. It's been going on for the past several years, a decade or so, but not at this scale. That's really the new aspect to this. There is a very strong expectation that recent college grads will be able to do some of their work remotely, and this sort of tension is a new challenge for employers to work through.
You know, Dr. Kahn, back to me, Bob Garrett, and I'll just tell you that recently I was having a conversation with my son, who is an English teacher in one of our local high schools, and he was telling me that, you know, Dad, snow days don't exist anymore, that we just go to remote work, remote school, in-person school, and they go back and forth, and I was a bit crestfallen that that remote is here to stay forever and ever now. But, okay, back to my next question is, the chamber's out in the field. Every other year, we do a biennial member survey, 700 members, and we get a good response, almost 50% response for our members. When we got into the issues of workforce and really into the nuts and bolts of workforce, I was a little surprised to hear that they're the most potent workforce recruitment tools that they feel that they have at their disposal are internships and apprenticeships, pre-apprenticeships for high school students, apprenticeships for college students, and particularly two-year college students. What is your data showing about the world of internships and apprenticeships for the graduating class of 23?
Well, we also recently asked our members about their preferred recruiting methods, and 80% of our employer members reported that internships provided the best ROI, the best return on investment for their recruiting efforts. And that was in comparison to such recruiting activities as career fairs, going on campus to do presentations in classes and elsewhere. So overwhelming majority of our members think that internships are their best recruitment method. We know that interns who are converted to full-time employees are retained at higher rates than folks who did not have internship experience. Our data show that 75% of interns were retained after their first year, compared to 50% of non-interns. We also know that onboarding an intern is much quicker because they've already gone through most of it during their internship. So there are multiple benefits to internship programs, and not to mention, you know, the work, the new ideas that students bring in. A lot of the time we hear from companies that students will be working on social media campaigns or other ideas where they're really closely tied into the customer base and have really good and fresh ideas that companies can leverage to improve their margin.
All right, Amy.
So, internships are a very powerful recruiting tool, and we're big fans.
Amy, you get a quick question for our good guest on the phone, Dr. Josh Kahn.
I'm actually just going to make a comment. I appreciate you joining us. One of the things we've been talking about at the Chamber is retention. So we have our engagement value and retention strategic plan and motto for the next 18 months. And looking at, you know, engaging with high school graduates as well as then the college graduates to retain them to the Valley. We've been trying to work with talk with the business owners and promoting the importance of the engagement to retain. And these are some of the things we're pointing to. Getting the students, the graduates into the company, you know, finding that then the training is a little bit easier. They're a little more malleable. Once you've been trained somewhere and then go somewhere else, it's a little more difficult to transition. So all of these great points. And to go to the housing market, is some of the things that we're seeing is that work from home remote work dynamic that's become more and more applicable to companies and organizations where we're getting people to what some consider our more rural area, coming from the cities, and we had seen also that trending from prior to COVID and just kind of being accelerated as such. But this is really great data, and really appreciate you being with us today.
And Amy, can you stay on past 9:06 for more with the chamber?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on hold. You stand by. Dr. Khan, thank you so much for checking in. Always good to hear this great kind of information. So we appreciate you calling in. So thank you again for the information, and we will certainly contact you again.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
Thank you so much. That is Dr. Josh Khan, Associate Director of Research and Public Policy of the National Association of Colleges and Employers. We're going to come back on Financial Friday, find out what's cooking with the chamber, and get some more conversation about what's happening locally. Amy Buhner, standing by, Chair of the Chamber. Bob Garrett, President of the Chamber. My good friend John Shipman is here. Rob Center, Beyond Fabulous. This is WDKOK Sunbury.
News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Now, here's your host for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence.
Greetings. Welcome on board WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show. On the Mark, ducking and cutting and avoiding the blows. Mr. Rob Center, our wonderful producer, taking great care of us. So we really appreciate his help and hard work. It is Financial Friday, so we got about 10 more minutes with the Greater Susquehanna Valley Chamber of Commerce. That means Amy Buhner of Bowen Agency Realtors on the line, Chair of the Chamber. Bob Garrett's here, President and CEO of the Greater Susquehanna Valley Chamber of Commerce. And earlier we had Dr. Josh Khan from NACE here, the National Association of Colleges and Employers. He's a real mythbuster if there ever was one. And John Shipman is here. He knows of what he speaks as well in terms of our economy. Any additional reaction to joblessness or what's really going on in our local and or national economy? We'll start with John.
Well, there's a lot of bright signs. When you look at the data coming out, and yet there are a few sectors that are flashing red. So hopefully we're going to get through this rough patch. I don't think there's any guarantee of that. As I read a lot of the economists, they say the end of this year could be pretty rough. So we'll wait and see. But I'm an optimist, so hopefully we'll get through this rough patch.
Bob?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what the feds do with today's data. There's data that comes out all month long. And if you take the full picture that we have data we got in May, it really looked like maybe it was time that the feds were going to tap the brakes and not do another interest rate increase. I don't know. Sure, the unemployment rate went up, but the jobs created was three times what most economists thought it was going to be. And keep in mind that that's 339,000 jobs that take into consideration the 100,000 or so layoffs that big tech did last right. month. So, can we really stand? Can this economy really stand another or even one or two more interest rate increases? I don't know. Amy will be talking a different story about home purchases if mortgage rates go back up where they were when you and I got out of school, Mark, at 22% or 16% or whatever. I remember it was a lot. I remember the pain of buying my first house. There's clearly something is going to happen this year. It may be a very shallow recession. It may, things are going to turn down, and we've got to build our resilience now for when that day comes.
Yeah. Well, I agree with that. And I think that the persistence of this looks a whole lot like the late 70s and early 80s, where the feds raised rates and said, well, maybe this is enough, and it wasn't, and then raised rates some more, and it wasn't enough. And finally, they were, as you mentioned, they were, a mortgage was 8 or 9%, which is makes it really hard for young couples, especially. Right. But this economy just resists the tightening so far. It's just full steam ahead.
I actually think at the end of the Carter administration, going into the Reagan administration, they actually talked about, we're going to drive this car into the ditch. We've got to slow this thing down. And you know, we made it through, but we'll make it through again. Our best days lie ahead. You know, I end every recording with that.
Yeah. It was a great time to buy government bonds. Yeah. You could buy a 30-year treasury at 11%. 30-year treasury at 11%.
Those were the days if you already owned your home.
Yeah, so, right.
Okay. Amy, more of your analysis, your observation about what Bob and John say is going on between what you know is going on.
Well, like I said, we just continue in a tight inventory, high buyer market, which is probably what's traditionally called a seller's market. It's been a couple of years ebbing and flowing, of course, along the way, much the same as interest rates now. I just was in a seminar, like I said, last week, where it was indicated that we might hit what is a light recession for a very short period of time if then we'll see interest rates drop again, not significantly into the threes or fours, but maybe back closer to five to try and help shorten that recession. I'm not going to pretend that I know exactly how all those correlations take place. You guys are way better than that. So I just bring the information that was brought to me and then allow you to help me interpret it. I don't know. That was from a real estate person who is a strong investor. But as of right now, I feel like the deep breath has been taken when the rise occurred. The buyers are looking and saying, huh, I guess this is, you know, this is where it's at for a bit. And if we want to do, or if we have to do, then we adjust accordingly. We have seen them slide back a little bit, which has been helpful. Things hadn't gone stagnant or alarmingly slower at any time in the last couple of months. So if what I'm hearing at the real estate end of things, that we might hit another bit of a low at some point next year, it sounds like it'll stay stable as far as interest rates go for the rest of this year. But
interest rates are you seeing now?
Low sixes, low to mid sixes, 6.275, I think, is what. And I just got a rate sheet, so I can try and pull that up quickly while we're discussing. We get those sent out, you know, weekly by multiple.
Well, you looked that up, so that's in the 6% range. Of course, they were down in the single digits for the folks that were doing the refis.
Right. Yeah, and that was really driving the market for a long, long time. I think what we have now probably are young, particularly young people who, you know, maybe they've been living in the mother's basement, although I suspect that Dr. Khan has data to show us that isn't really happening either. But that's the problem when all you have is anecdotes and no data. Hey, one thing we did miss, Mark, that I did want to mention is we haven't mentioned yet during this show the participation rate. That's the other piece of the labor statistics that we always like to talk about. The participation rate for May was 62.6%. And if I can draw a word picture for you, for your mind's eye, basically if you make a chart and you go back 10 years, what we've seen now is three straight months of 62.6%. Another way of saying that is 37.4% of the available individuals who could be in the labor force for whatever reason aren't in there, are not actively working. But here's the thing I want to paint for you is that plateau now for 3 months is exactly equal to the lowest point. See, I'm pointing out on our charts here, John, at our lowest point in the last decade, and that's where it's plateaued. That's not good news. We have got to figure out ways to get more people into the labor force. There's got to be a solution here, and that's where the chamber's working with the early learning, with transportation, all those kind of things, so we can get people back into the labor force.
All right. Amy, we'll give you the last word. Anything to add to our discussion?
I don't think right now. I'll just be keeping an eye on the rates and hearing what I hear in the real estate world, learning what I need to learn in the economy world, and trying to know what I know in the business world. So.
All right. Sounds fabulous. Thank you so much for checking in. Always nice to talk to you. We will talk again. I know that to be true. So thank you, Amy.
Thank you very much. Hope to see everybody tomorrow in Sunbury at the Sandwich Stroll and the Summer Kickoff Celebration.
And at the Shikellamy State Park Marina Outdoor Expo and the Cornhole Tournament at the Ice Rink and the Airport Open House and the Craft Show in Lewisburg and the yard sales on the Isle of Kew.
Makes you want to say whoop-dee-doo.
Yeah, there's a lot there,
you'll have something to do and Woo-hoo. Maybe have to go to bed early.
Yep. Stay away from your hammock tomorrow. All right, thank you, Amy. Much appreciated. What's cooking with the chamber?
Yeah, let me just go over a couple things. First thing, while we're on the show here, the annual Guy Temple alumni breakfast is going on over at the Pine Barn in Danville. That's the Leadership Susquehanna Valley, where they select their alumni of the year. So watch later today, because I don't even know who I'm sponsoring it, and I don't even know who the alum of the year is. So that's pretty exciting. So watch for that. 1 million cups for those entrepreneurs out there. Tune into this. 1 million cups is on June 14th. So Flag Day. You'll want to be involved with that. Oh, you will. Fabulous, Mark. And then the Leadership Susquehanna Valley graduation class of 2023, and they are some eager beavers, let me tell you, is the next day, June 15th. We have a ribbon cutting at State Farm AC Cruise on the 16th. On the 20th, Paella and Pollinators. Now, how's that for a chamber event?
Oh, I know who's doing
that presentation.
Thank you, Zach.
Zach Stoddard has reconfigured our garden around the patio in the back of the, we should be calling it the John Shipman Building. Not Memorial Building, John. Don't get me wrong. John was instrumental in us having that beautiful headquarters. But we've put in basically a beautiful pollinator garden back there, and poor Zach's been watering every day. Eventually, it will rain. And then one thing, I don't have the date on it yet, but I do want to tell folks that later this month, we're gonna jump in, you know, from the frying pan to the fire, but the chamber with some subject matter experts is we're going to really try to tackle the issue of violence and aggression, gun violence particularly. There has to be a business position on this. We no longer can sort of stand on the sidelines and say, well, that will never happen here, because it's not if it will happen here, but when it happens here, and what can we do right now to make sure that we don't have the experiences that so many other communities have had, because that is really, really, really bad for your local economy.
Okay, well, we will talk about that and cover it and be there and make sure that that gets a lot more attention as it approaches. Thank you so much, sir.
Always a pleasure, and bon voyage, good luck. Next month it'll be a different, I won't say a fresher face, because you look pretty good.
Oh, thank you.
But we'll be dealing with a different face.
All right. Bob Garrett of the Greater Susquehanna Valley Chamber of Commerce. We'll be right back.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto.
Welcome back. Bob Garrett's going to stay put for one moment. Once he saw who our next guest is, he sat right back down. John Shipman is here. I'm Mark Lawrence. Rob Sanders, our fabulous producer, taking good care of us. And on the news line with us now, U.S. Congressman Dan Muser, 9th District, a Republican, lives in Dallas, PA, and very active in the debt ceiling discussions, if you want to call it that. I think he raised his voice a couple times when he was at the microphone when I saw you on C-SPAN, very adamant about how this is a solution, but not a perfect solution. So, Congressman, thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate it.
Mark, of course. Hey, great to be with you. Appreciate it.
And Bob?
Dan, this is, or I should say Congressman Muser, this is Bob Garrett from the Greater Susquehanna Valley Chamber of Commerce. I had no expectation I would talk to you this morning, but I wanted to give you great news. Thanks to your good work for the people of Shamokin and all of the Greater Susquehanna Valley, we had our ribbon cutting of Illumination Station, which you worked so hard on to help them out with, clear some regulatory issues, but also to help pay the bills. So thank you, Dan, for all that you do for the people of the Greater Susquehanna Valley, particularly for Northumberland and Montour counties, which are in your district. But the rest of us do get benefit from all that you're doing for us. I just want to say thank you, Congressman, and I hope to see you soon. Maybe not in your office in Washington, but on the link somewhere. I don't know. But the summer is here, and it's time to get out and enjoy ourselves a little bit.
Well, I'll be over in Shamokin and Sunbury next week, and it'd be great to see you, Bob, and thanks for all the great work that you do for revitalization and advancing our communities. And yeah, we were fortunate to bring some real help to Shamokin and some of the other projects over there. So, hey, revitalization is so important for our communities. Some of this money is being spent. We want to make sure it's being spent right. So that's part of my job.
Well, and the other, one more thing. Mark tried to get in here, Dan, and I'm not going to give him the space. But one more thing is that what people need to understand is as you represent us in Congress, you are also helping us out, cutting through the red tape. You know, I don't know of anyone who has more credibility than a gentleman who is a small business person who happened to have been the Secretary of Revenue of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania before serving in Congress. And Congressman Muser, you get it, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Yeah, I certainly see myself and act in the poor small business, being on financial services and the Small Business Committee. And there are a few of us that is our specialty, and it's definitely mine. And let's face it, 70% of those working in throughout Pennsylvania work for small businesses. So it's definitely in my wheelhouse, and I enjoy it. And we're going to keep on making advances and strengthening our economy to the best of our ability.
All right. Thank you for talking to Bob. You gave him some more to live for today, so he's appreciative for that. Congressman, your reaction, the debt ceiling vote, the whole debacle, and, you know, we've solved this issue technically for another couple years.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was a tough negotiation. I really didn't appreciate the Biden administration's stance, as you could probably imagine, kind of ignoring it, not willing to negotiate, bringing it down to the brink of default. Honestly, I don't know what turned them. Probably, frankly, the economic community as a whole, the big banks, those who know what the catastrophe of default would have been. Because seriously, you know, that's talked about, but not all that much. I mean, we would have had long-term damage. We would have had credit downturns. We would have had interest rate hikes. The Biden administration's created a very fragile economy as we already, and this really, we would have had devalue of the dollar. The reserve currency could have been put at risk. I mean, if this would have gone another couple of days, even if we defaulted for 2 days, economists I spoke to said the markets, the world economy, the U.S. economy would be rattled, and 10% of the economy would not be getting paid, and that would mean Social Security, Medicare, pensions, treasury bonds wouldn't be paid. So, you know, it was very irresponsible on the part of the Biden administration. We've been trying to negotiate this for 100 days. But fortunately, we, meaning conservatives, got a good 10, if not 11, conservative wins. Even, you know, my friend Grover Norquist at Americans for Tax Reform was very congratulatory as to what what got done in the end. And I know there's a lot of controversy, a lot of people out there that say, hey, you guys should have gotten more, you should have done this. But there's a real problem. We have majority in the House, because if we didn't, we'd be spending another $1 trillion, and I think that's a fact. But you know, we have to pass the most conservative bill we can that will pass with a Biden White House and Chuck Schumer running the Senate. So I mean, this thing, you know, it saves about $100 billion a year. That's nothing to sneeze at. It has spending caps on it. It ends the student loan pause, so people have to start paying their student loans again. It claws back $28 billion from COVID. There's something else in it. It basically forces the Democrats to the table. Something Tom Massey, a friend of mine in the House, a staunch conservative, put in. There'll be an automatic reduction in appropriations if we don't pass all 12 appropriations bills in the budget, not just the omnibus. So that's huge. That allows Republicans to allocate, even though we're still spending too much. It puts us in the driver's seat as to where those funds are going to go and where they won't go. As importantly, where they won't go. So we got other opportunities to save money. We got work requirements on the SNAP program, and as well something else that's very important: this PAYGO. You know, the Biden White House spent over $1 trillion in 2.5 years through executive orders. They can't do that anymore. We just there was a provision in here called the PAYGO that they need congressional approval to do, even to engage in anything over $100 million what's considered essential. So that's just some of the, you know, the Mountain Valley Pipeline is going to be so important for Pennsylvania. Huge numbers associated with that for our natural gas industry. So we got a lot. We nowhere near perfect, as you opened up this, Mark. Nowhere near, but we need the White House, frankly, and we need the Senate if we really want to have a path for the type of fiscal responsibility and cutting of wasteful spending that I'm committed to. I mean, you know, I got into this House to not just sit in a chair. We want to strengthen our economy and advance our national security, and it starts with a good plan for our economic balance and for an orderly approach to all of this, where we're not wasting taxpayer dollars.
Congressman, this is John Shipman. Appreciate you coming on today. When the President proposed his original budget, it was $7.2 trillion. What is the final number on the compromise that you were able to come up with?
Well, you know, I take things year by year. I mean, there's six-year estimates. There are 10-year estimates. Frankly, I mean, you know, this will save. You know, the CBO came out with another report that said it was going to be $2 trillion in savings. I'm not sure if it's going to be that, because I didn't do business plans for 10 years trying to do that here. Over the next 2 years, the spending will be reduced by empirically $200 billion. So when we were running deficits, which we're going to continue to do, I'm not going to deny that. But last year, we overspent by $1.5 trillion. Of deficit spending. This year, or next year moving forward, it will be considerably less, at least $200 billion. But then if you add in the executive order monies as well that were being spent, it should be better than that. It's progress. It's not mission accomplished by any means, but it is progress.
Okay, thank you.
And you also have heard that folks say, particularly as it relates to SNAP benefits and able-bodied individuals, and Congressional Budget Office apparently confirmed some of this, that it is more disruptive than helpful when these kind of requirements are imposed. It's just a tiny little sliver of the food stamp budget overall anyway. But what's your reaction to hearing that actually it doesn't help when you add this requirement?
Oh, it certainly does. And you know what? The American people demand it. 80% of people say, yeah, there should be some sort of work requirements for able-bodied people between the age of 18 and 55 that don't have any dependents and have no ailments. You know, the taxpayers aren't going to just pay them to even try to get a job. So it's a 20-hour requirement within the SNAP program. And look, for those who need SNAP, it's there. I mean, there's a lot of money that, again, the taxpayers pay and provide out of the goodness of their heart. But we you got to have limits on it, and work requirements have worked before. So it's nothing necessarily new. It's just something that will create the incentive for people to go out and improve their lives. You know, you don't live the American dream by not working. So hopefully this puts some people on a better path.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your check-in. Much appreciated. We'll talk again, and you have an open mic here anytime.
Really appreciate you, gentlemen. Mark, Bob, John, great. Thanks for the opportunity to explain this, and keep up the great work, and I'll see you over in Susquehanna Valley very soon.
Right. We'll see you in Sunbury and Shamokin in next week, and then, if nothing else, we'll see you on the sidelines this fall. We'll go from there. Thank you, sir.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Much appreciated. Yeah, his son plays for Bucknell University, so you can see the congressman there dressed in civilian clothes with no necktie and raising his voice there, too, actually. So, all right, we're going to take a quickie break. When we come back, we'll do headlines. We'll dig into what I never see in the jobless numbers, but John rolls his eyes when he says it's going up and down slightly and says, well, here's what's really happening. So we're going to do that. We're going to open up the phones. Rob Sanders taking his finger off the button, so we are good to go with open phones, 570-743-9565. You can email us at onthemark@wkok.com or text us at 70236. Include the keyword OTM, our show sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company. All right, we're back on the radio. Mark Lawrence here. Rob Setter, super duper job on the other side of the glass. And John Shipman here, fabulous business person. Hold on to your opinions, because I have to talk about the Sunbury Motor Company. Check them out at sunburymotors.com. They got lots of vehicles on display now. Inventory's back up, more trucks. You can order the Lightning truck. They got that, well, I doubt that it's there anymore, but they had of course, it's an $80,000 small Bronco, but it was just a gorgeous truck. I drove it around the parking lot. I didn't know what the wheels were. I knew they were 30 inches. They're 32 inches, I was told. So, but this is a brand new Bronco right off the line. High price tag, but it's 100% ready. You wouldn't have to do anything to it. And a lot of those monster trucks, you know, sometimes you wonder how reliable they are if you want to drive to Florida or Canada with them, or if you want to go 80 or maybe even faster on the highway. Well, this truck is store-bought, and it is 100% ready for that. They said, so you can do it. I don't know that I'd take a Bronco 80 miles an hour on a bumpy road, but hey, it's your truck once you pay for it. So, but that's just one of the examples. Almost every vehicle they sell is now in inventory on the lot or can be ordered. The Lightning's still about a couple of months away from the wait, but at least you're going to get one now. SunburyMotors.com is their website. Go see them on North 4th Street in Sunbury or the Kia dealership on Routes 11 and 15. They would just love to put you in a new Ford, Hyundai, or Kia, and that's what's going to make you the happiest motorist in the valley when you're driving around in an SMC truck. As well, I'm not in my truck right now, but I'm in one of their trucks, and you're in your truck today, right?
Right.
So we're all getting around. We got great vehicles from the Sunbury Motor Company. All right, call us now, 570-743-9565. Any reaction to Congressman Muser's remarks, or Dr. Josh Kahn was on earlier, studying the individuals who are coming out of college who want to work and want to better themselves and don't seem selfish or just in it for the fun, according to their actual statistics, so we can talk about that. You can email us at onthemark@wkok.com or text us at 70236. Very brief news headlines here. Volunteers called to a home in the Milton area this morning, 3 a.m., a home heavily damaged. It was unoccupied at the time. No injuries there, and a dozen volunteer fire company and paid fire company, Lewisburg, responded there, plus the Milton EMS. Four local mayors have declared today National Gun Violence Awareness Awareness Day. That's why Mr. Garrett was wearing orange here today. Kendi Alvarez of Lewisburg, Josh Brocious of Sunbury, Dan Berard of Northumberland, and Jeff Reed of Sealands have signed the proclamations. It is National Gun Violence Awareness Day. Wear orange. AP reported that Eugene DePasquale, Pennsylvania's former two-term Auditor General and highly regarded while he was in office, will run for State Attorney General, an office that played a critical role, of course, in the election in 2020. He's the first candidate to announce for 2024 State Attorney General, but others are expected, according to the AP. Let's see. U.S. Senate last night, in case you live in a cave, passed the legislation to suspend the debt ceiling and limits federal spending in a number of ways. They sent the bill to the president's desk, who says he will sign it, and then he'll address the nation tonight to show how he has saved the day from a crisis that he started building up on 50 years ago. Oh, I'm sorry. That's a little editorial comment there. But honest to Pete, they're all like patting themselves on the back saying, look, we dug this huge, or we almost cut all the way through the branch we were sitting on, but at the last minute we fixed it. It's ridiculous.
Well, and you know, we have an agreement, but we're still going to add. We're still probably going to add another $2 to $3 trillion of debt that this coming fiscal year, because the $7.2 trillion budget proposal that the president put out, he bragged last week that he didn't give up anything. So you know, it's insane, actually, the way they spend. We the taxpayers will pay $800 billion in interest this year on the federal deficit. Think about that, almost $1 trillion just in interest
this year. Well, it's, and so that adds, that's using a credit card to pay your credit cards.
That's
right?
Pretty much.
Okay. And Republicans are just as bad. So, you know, they're finger pointing in Washington. So that's normal. But they're both all terrible at it.
Donald Trump was just as bad. I mean, it's all three of the last presidents have added. Presidents up until the end of George W. Bush had run up almost $10 trillion. The last three presidents have run up an additional $22 trillion. Imagine that, three presidents, $22 trillion. It's just like there's no regard. It's just spend, spend, spend.
Well, I can ask this since Joe's not here. Was Ronald Reagan part of the problem too? I mean, he used to say he was part of the solution.
Actually, well, he did some good things, but he really. His administration put in place the tools that later on, but he was a fairly big spender. But it's like a freight train. Once you get that thing rolling, you don't stop it on a dime. And so it took time. In fact, it took a tax increase under George H.W. Bush, in addition to the reforms under the Reagan administration, till finally Bill Clinton enjoyed 4 years of budget surpluses in his second term because of what had been done the 8 or 10 years previous. So that's the last time we've paid anything on our debt was in 2020.
Will our economy collapse under the weight of this debt?
It will eventually if we don't address it. Yeah. I mean, the debt will eventually, at least historically, it will cause hyperinflation. Did it in Germany after World War I. It did in Venezuela after Hugo Chavez did all of his wonderful changes down there. So hyperinflation generally, once how high do interest rates have to go? And that's what everybody's saying. Well, we need to stop increasing interest rates. Well, we really can't if we want to get the national debt under control.
All right. So we invite folks to call us about these topics. 570-743-9565. Stan, you are on the mark. Thanks for calling in. We got one caller coming in and one ready to go. Go ahead, Stan.
Good morning. So let me get this straight, John. We got to raise the interest rates to bring the economy under control to help bring inflation down. Is that what you're telling me?
That's what historically governments have done, yes.
All right. But doesn't the government have to stop, or really reduce spending to also bring down inflation?
You are correct.
And with the interest rates going up, they're spending more every day on debt service, so they're spending more every day. So how's this going to flesh out here?
Collapse.
Well, you make a good point. We can't continue to do what we're doing. You know, Republicans are bragging about all the wonderful things they did, but we're still probably looking at a $2 trillion budget deficit, maybe $2.5 trillion budget deficit in this fiscal year. So did they really accomplish a lot? Well, maybe they slowed the rate of growth a little bit, but they certainly didn't do enough to reverse what's going on.
Okay, so they're going to go $1 trillion-plus deficit spending in the budget. How much of that goes directly upon the debt? The whole 1-point-whatever trillion?
Yep.
Does that mean, okay, so we're at 33 trillion right now. So if they're going to spend an extra, we're going to go to 34 next year.
Or at least, plus. Or maybe 35.
35. Okay, what's a rounding error of a couple trillion, right? That's the way they seem to be playing the game down there.
Yep.
You know, well, what's a few extra trillion? Well, you know, no big deal. You know, it's all Trump's fault. He, you know, raised it so high because of the pandemic. But that being said, I got a question for you, John. You may or may not have an answer. I keep hearing these ads on the radio about what do they call it? Payroll tax refunds, they're calling it, up to $26,000, and I got to looking into it a little bit, and they're calling it an employee retention tax credit because of COVID, and it's for people that stayed open, businesses that stayed open with more than 4 employees in basically the last quarters of 2020 and the first 2 quarters of 2021. So they want to give them, and if they have to apply for it, it's not a, yeah, I guess it's not easy. I don't know, they got accounting firms doing this, so maybe is it, or it isn't easy. I have no idea. But up to $26,000 per employee. So where's that money coming from? If it's coming, you know, they're refunding these people, and they paid in their payroll taxes. That's, payroll taxes are the Social Security and Medicare tax, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So if they're going to refund them up to $26,000, of that money that went into payroll taxes, which is supposed to go into the Social Security Trust Fund, how is the trust fund growing when you're giving money back?
Well, in fact, the trust fund is no longer growing. A couple of years ago, the outlays exceeded the annual income for the Social Security and Medicare taxes. So that's why the prophecy that by 2035, the trust funds will be absolutely broke, and they will probably have to reduce Social Security benefits by 20 or 25%. So this is another crisis that's waiting to happen, and Congress won't address it, at least for 2 more years, because if you're the one that says we need to increase taxes to save Social Security, the other, or cut benefits, the other party is going to demonize you in the next election. So nobody wants to go first. So it'll be a crisis before they do anything.
Yeah, and if you're in Congress, you can't even use that sentence in a phrase, or that phrase in a sentence, because then they'll excerpt it, and then they'll say, see, Republicans do want to raise taxes and lower Social Security.
And I saw a perfect example of that last night online. This woman is, I think it was Senator Kennedy out of Louisiana, was saying that, you know, the life, he was going on about life expectancy is right now 75 or 80, whatever. But the 20-year-olds plus, you know, the young kids coming up now, their life expectancy is going to be 85 to 95 or whatever. So how can we have these people, kids, that are going to come up to the Social Security system as it is right now, retiring at 65, which I guess is retirement age right now. I'm not sure. I always plan on there is going to be no Social Security when I get to that age and whatever.
Yeah,
if you it has always been my thinking. But is it 65 or 67 if you get the full
67, Social Security? Currently 67 is the full retirement age. In 1934, when the U.S. government passed the Social Security law, average life expectancy was 65. So really what they did is say, if you live longer than average, we'll help you out. Of course, life expectancy has continued to grow, as you pointed out. American males now live to average of 72 or 73, and American females live to an average of 76 or 77. So that's the average. And what they have done is tinkered with it a little bit, but they haven't fixed it.
Well, that was the point of this little post online. This girl, woman, was saying, well, see, the Republicans say they don't want to touch Social Security, but here they are saying they want to touch Social Security by making people work longer. That was their whole point. But as I made a little comment, well, if you want to retire and you just go, you know, save your money and retire, you don't have to depend on Social Security, and then it won't affect you at all, will it? Was basically my comment back to her. But that, you know, that in itself, they're going to have to do something. You know, raise it to 69, maybe, before the full, but they still could start drawing Social Security right now at 62, correct?
I think that'll be the next thing. They will, I think, again, raise the maximum. They raised the maximum this time over a period of almost 20 years, 2 months a year till they could raise it by 2 years. But 62 is pretty young today. I think that's something they're going to address. But it will come in a package that will probably not affect anyone who is within 15 or 20 years of retirement. So they'll do what they did in the 1970s, and they'll say, okay, if you were born prior to this day, we're not going to affect your benefits, but anybody born after that day will see the benefits.
So try to steer the ship in the right direction. Stan, we got to hit the road, but thank you, sir.
All right, things to think about. So y'all have a great day.
Hey, you too, buddy. Thank you so much. Always a provocative caller. Appreciate that. We'll take a quick break. We got a doctor on the line. We're going to talk to her momentarily on WDKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto race.
All right, welcome back to WDKOK Live Telephone Talk Show on the Mark. I'm Mark Lawrence. John Shipman is here, my good co-host, and Rob Center is producing. Dr. Lanier Allam is here, director of the Susquehanna Valley Community Education Project. So, Lanier, please, you got the floor. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Mark. I really enjoyed this conversation today between Bob Garrett and Dr. Kahn, because what the chamber is aiming to do to retain youth talent in the area, that's precisely what community colleges do. 94% to 97% of those who attend a community college, they intend to remain in the area, employed, and being part of the community. Community colleges have been offering internships since they were started. That's just part of the fabric of what a community college does in its programming. And then I think one thing we might consider as a solution to the participation rate of 37.4% is community engagement within our community with those who are kind of withdrawing, and let them know that their community college exists in their local area in order to serve them and prepare them so that they can have gainful employment. One quick thing, too, when Dr. Khan was explaining about how college grads want to invest in their skills, and so what a community college does is they have workforce training, they have skills training, they certificates in industry certificates, certifications, and so, you know, this is ongoing within the community colleges. It's whether it's through community education classes or very specific industry training. And then finally, I thought the lifelong learning is so important, and the 55-plus programs that NACE advocates for, community colleges are doing these remarkably well in college credit-bearing courses for those 55-plus who want to achieve a credential and then switch a career. So those were the things that really stood out to me. I loved this program and appreciate very much that Dr. Khan was there and Bob's comments.
Well, it fits right in with Financial Friday when we're talking about how we're addressing the issues. We've identified 1,000 issues, but for everything we've talked about today, we talked about solutions.
Well, and I think that when we look at our area, our number one export is our young people. Northumberland County has lost 3,000 citizens since the last census 2 years ago. So this is an alarming rate. The other three counties, Snyder, Union, and Montour, are in the same boat. Our population is aging because more and more our young people go away to college and never come back.
Well, and I guess my question for Lanier would be, where are we in terms of getting the momentum you need? You have Bob Garrett now listening to the conversations, so that's a big plus. You got a lot of other folks that are now part of the conversation.
Indeed, and we do see a lot more, as you call it, conversation, dialogue, momentum, discussion on the topic, and we're going to be holding a business leaders forum on the Susquehanna Valley Community College Business Plan. This was a process that our leadership went through on the board, and we developed a working document, a business plan for our own community college. That event will be an hour and a half. We have leaders from across the valley who are in business, and they are going to speak as to their perspective on the importance of establishing a regional community college. That's going to be for business leaders and those who are in HR, who really see the workforce needs and are looking for this solution, which is working in other places of Pennsylvania as well as across the nation. And in New Jersey, 50% of their increase is 50% in the community colleges right now. So we are seeing that with this regional public asset, we would have a catalyst to provide the solutions that we're looking for.
All right, fantastic. Lanier, do I have you scheduled for Sunrise yet? I know I'm going to, but did I do that yet?
Yes, Mark. Myself and Dr. Carl Jensen, he's the professor emeritus from the Citadel, and we will be there 7 o'clock. I think for a 7:10 sunrise show with you on June 5.
Okay. Thank you. I don't have an active calendar in front of me, but and a completely inactive memory with me. So thank you so much, Lanier. Thanks for all you're doing, and we're looking forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you.
Much
bye-bye.
Appreciated. Dr. Lanier Allam, director of the Susquehanna Valley Community Education Project, newcommunitycollege.org. www.mortgagefinancialservices.org.
Yes.
All right. And thank you, John, for coming
in. Thanks so much, Mark.
Much appreciated. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Financial Friday with the Congressional Update and the Community College add-on. Much appreciated. This is WDKOK Sunbury.